spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today about the Interfaith Alliance, which is a national movement which has also a local chapter in Champaign-Urbana. And we have three guests representing the religious traditions of Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. Welcome to our three guests. We have, in that order, Michael Shapiro and Rika Shorish and Colleen Vojak. Colleen, let's start with you. How did the local chapter of the Interfaith Alliance get started in Champaign-Urbana?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've been a member of the national organization for quite a few years. And early this year, I got the idea that maybe it would be a good idea to try to start up a local chapter. But I didn't know if this was something that others were, you know, interested in doing.
You didn't know if anyone would come.
Yes, yeah. And I also didn't know if the national organization encouraged this or not. So I contacted the national organization, and I spoke with someone there. And they said, yes, as a matter of fact, these local chapters are starting to crop up very quickly. And the woman I spoke with said that they had less than 20 local chapters at that time. This was in April. But that they would love for us to start one up. So I did. I put some ads out. I called some friends. I sent out some emails.
Now, why did you want to do this? What motivated you to join the Interfaith Alliance to start with?
Well, I've been very impressed with the Interfaith Alliance in terms of their mission. They seem to, this is my interpretation of some of their goals. They have the opinion that right now there's not a very healthy relationship between religion and politics in our country. Mm-hmm. That they tend to, I think they believe that there's the danger that certain groups, particularly the religious right, is tending to dominate some of the political discourse, dominate some of the exposure on the media, and also trying to advance their religious cause in terms of laws and policies and things like that, and that's not very healthy for a democratic society. In a democratic society, all groups should have an equal voice. All groups should have input. One group shouldn't be trying to push their agenda and then make other people adhere to that agenda.
Just give in.
Right.
Now, Rika, you tell us a little bit about the National Interfaith Alliance. How big is it? How long has it been around? Tell us a little bit about it.
How long has it been around, Colleen? I'm not sure about that.
I know it's been at least a decade. And I'm not sure mm-hmm. beyond that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I know right now they're saying they've got about 150,000 members drawn from 75 faith traditions. And now, as of July, we have got 47 local alliances. So I think you could read from that a real interest nationwide on mm-hmm. everybody trying to get together and more than they have in the past, I think.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. true. In just a matter of the last 4 or 5 months, almost 30 new alliances have popped up mm-hmm. around the country.
Locally. Rick, if mm-hmm. I could just stick with you for a minute. From the Muslim tradition, mm-hmm. Why are you interested? Why would a Muslim be involved in this kind of an interfaith group?
Okay. On two levels. One, Colleen contacted our imam. Over here at you will maybe hear me referring to it as CIMIC, which is the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center here in Urbana. Colleen contacted our imam, as I said, and, you know, said, well, she wanted to start this, were we interested, and so on. And then he asked for some volunteers. And I personally am very interested in interfaith dialogue and learning about other faiths and having other faiths learn about us. And so I was very interested in joining, and I'm relatively new to it. But so that's on one level, and I think you were getting at perhaps a greater level there.
Well, not really, but let me ask a question listeners might be thinking. Why would a Muslim be interested in learning about other traditions? Because, after all, you have the truth.
Well, I think every religion, you know, somebody's going to say we have the truth.
Sure.
Unfortunately, we all live on this little planet called the Earth, and it's extremely, extremely important, especially nowadays, that we all understand where we're all coming from. Mm-hmm. And I think, as you or Colleen had just mentioned a few minutes ago, it's getting to the point where a few people in each religious tradition, whether it's Judaism, Christianity, Islam, Hinduism, there's this little right-wing group out there, almost fascistic. And all of a sudden, they're defining all of our, you know, ages-old faith traditions, all of which, you know, have so much good to offer. And yet you have these little groups out here that are really, really stirring the pot. And I think it's time, and I think this is what Colleen was getting at, that we all get together here and say, hey, wait a minute. You know, that's not what Christianity is. That's not what Islam is. That's not what Judaism is. You know, who are these Hindus burning down masjids? You know, and they don't want anybody but, you know, very intolerant, that sort of thing. Why is this? You know, why are they speaking for other, you know, for the whole Hindu religion, which has always been rather very tolerant in India, actually, throughout the ages? So you have this worldwide phenomenon going on, which is, of course, very dangerous for all of us.
Michael Shapiro, coming from the Jewish tradition, what ethical insights does Judaism bring to interfaith dialogue and cooperation?
Well, let me take it a little differently. The Judaism has a passion for social justice. It comes out of the prophetic tradition. It's there in Isaiah and all the other prophets, and it's a much higher value in their writings than, let's say, ritual observance or dietary laws or anything like that. So social justice is something that we can practice within our community, within the Jewish community, but as Rika says, we all live together on Earth and in Champaign-Urbana and Illinois and the United States. And so the real social justice requires partnership. And I think because our prophetic tradition is also shared with Christians and Muslims have their own traditions of social justice, we have natural partners. And I think that's very good, I think, for us to collaborate.
So, you talk about the Jewish prophetic tradition. When was that in history?
Well, it goes back to way before the Common Era, as we like to say, at a time when the Israelites were being besieged by Assyrians, Babylonians, and the superpowers of the day. And it was a little country then as now. The prophets often took the view that the Israelites were straying from the way, the proper way, and would be punished, never destroyed, but certainly chastised by a loving God. But one of the things, ways in which they were going wrong, was neglecting, as Isaiah says, for example, the widow and the orphan. And on our holiest day of the year, the Day of Atonement, we read the passage from Isaiah where he says, "I'm not interested in the voice of God. I'm not interested in your sacrifices and your fasting. That doesn't impress me. As long as the widow and the orphan is suffering, that's what you have to look at." So that goes deep, I think, in our tradition.
We don't want to give the impression on this Keeping the Faith program this afternoon that these three representatives of these three religious traditions are speaking for everyone. So, of course, we want to encourage listeners who would like to join this conversation and speak from their own tradition or represent one of these traditions in a different way to have a chance to do that. Anywhere the program is heard, you may call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL, the call letters of the station. In Champaign-Urbana, we have several local lines that you may reach by punching in 333-9455. So, locally, 333-WILL, elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455. Do encourage listeners to give us a call. Colleen, let me get back to you. In terms of the response that you had when you first said, let's start a local chapter, what are some of the issues that have come up in discussion of people from different faith traditions who are concerned about how they can have a say in political policies and decisions that are being made?
Well, if I understand your question correctly, you're wondering what has motivated people to become members? Is that...
Yeah, and what kind of talk have you had? What have you decided to do?
Okay. Well, One thing we've decided is that we would like to just enrich our own understanding of each other in terms of different faith traditions. So we'd like to have a dialogue going at the meetings where we are talking about a particular topic or topics. And so that is one of our goals. We'd like to get people from many different traditions there. And in fact, at our next meeting, we've decided that we'd like to talk about what different faith traditions have to say about environmental awareness or stewardship. So we have invited Professor Robert McKim to come, and he's going to talk for a few minutes and then lead us in a discussion about that.
Where will that meeting be and when?
Yes, that meeting will be on Monday, September 12th at 7 p.m. at the McKinley Foundation in the Dean Clark Room. And McKinley Foundation is located at the corner of 5th and Daniels.
809 South 5th, I seem to remember from somewhere.
Thank you.
Okay.
But in terms of other motivations, I think there are a variety of motivations. We're still in the process of actually trying to define what our goals are. One thing we've identified is that we really would like to do a better job at publicizing various events and projects that are occurring in the community that relate to our mission. So we're in the process of setting up a website. And that website will be a way in which different groups can post their activities, their projects, events, and so that other people can find out about them and join in. Because I think that networking is very important. We do share many people in this community share a set of values and concerns, and I think if they knew more about what was happening, they would be more likely to show up and help others with their projects and hope for the same in return.
It certainly has been the case in my observation that a mosque or a church or a synagogue may advertise to their own people their projects, and other groups may not even hear about them, and yet there, as you say, may be some shared common values.
Right.
Let's talk about what some of those might be. What are some of the common values from the three religious traditions represented here around these microphones?
Well, I think, as Michael was saying, social justice, of course, is central to Islam. You're not just supposed to just sit around and do nothing. You're supposed to be out there helping people. We also have the tradition of widows and orphans, and then expanding that to today, you just have vulnerable groups of people, poverty, and so on. And I think a number of us in this community, from all the different faith traditions, want to do something locally. And we've got a number of problems in our community, even though we may not be completely aware of it or think about it very often. Neither Christy Clinic or Carl Clinic, for example, accept any new Medicaid patients. And then this has snowballed into Carl helping Francis Nelson come along. So we have a large population that is in need of medical care. You have uninsured people. Problems such as this that are in our community, in each one of our faith traditions, I can't remember, there's a women's auxiliary. They provide soup, I think, and some foods to the Time Center for the Homeless. And each group has one little thing that they do, which is fine. But I think we all need to get together now and address these somewhat larger issues, like how many homeless do we actually have now, what's working, what's not. What are we going to do with the Medicaid situation? What are we going to do with local nursing homes, which are becoming a very severe problem, on even having nursing homes remaining open, much less can you afford them, much less is Medicare going to continue to pay for those people who have no money. So I think the whole point is that there's a number of us in our community in Champaign-Urbana and even outside those city limits into the county in general. That know that, you know, you've got to all come together and work together to solve some of these problems instead of each one of us trying to do it all by ourselves.
And as I understand the Interfaith Alliance mission, both nationally and locally, it's also not just to encourage people from different faith traditions to do direct help or provide money, but to also influence public policy.
Absolutely.
That results in some of those problems.
Absolutely. I think, in fact, that's probably a a priority, that and that, along with the educational. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I think on a national level there are social justice issues as well that people are concerned about. For example, I was reading an article by Jim Wallace, who wrote the book God's Politics, Why the Right Gets It Wrong and the Left Doesn't Get It. And one of the points that he makes is that planning a budget, a national budget, is a moral and ethical and religious concern. And this is something that we should examine in terms of what it means when we set aside X amount of money here or there. I think a lot of people, I'm dismayed about how we've been choosing to spend our money nationally. There are a lot of poor people out there who need help, and our budget is being cut in terms of services to people like that. On the other hand, we're pouring over $2 billion out for the war. And so, I mean, what does this say about what our priorities are in terms of what we value as a country?
I want to get back to that issue of the national budget and the morals involved in it, but we do have a couple callers waiting, and I want to include them. Let's go to line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'm very enthusiastic about the Interfaith Alliance. I wanted to ask one question about children. You spoke of the vulnerable. Talk about children, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Children are, of course, some of the most vulnerable folks in society, particularly those from poor families. Any of you, Michael Shapiro, any thoughts on that?
Well, for a long time I've been associated with the Champaign-Urbana Jewish Federation, which raises money within the Jewish community and then disperses it to various charities, both local and regional and national and international. One of our highest priorities has been a youth center in Ashkelon for particularly in a very poor neighborhood, mostly recent immigrants. We provided what is essentially their program budget. They get salaries for their staff from the government, but that's about all. So that's one example. I mean, it's always a problem to sort of pinpoint where you think you can help and be of most help. And we could spread that money widely, or we could give it to a few places and try to make a difference. But we think these children at risk and youth at risk is important enough for us to concentrate on.
And there are Jewish organizations nationally in this country that do try to influence public policy to help poor children, for example.
Yeah, there are at the national level. There's the Reform Movement, all the Jewish movement, religious movements are concerned about children, of course, but I think the liberal movements tend to be more politically involved and try to influence legislators.
We have a couple other callers waiting. Let's go to line two. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Yes, good. Thank you for your conversation. I'm hoping that the international or the interfaith organization will grow, because I'm still shaking over what Pat Robertson said on his very, very influential television program last week. I didn't watch it, but everyone's heard about it. And when you find a person like this who has so much power nationally and internationally, what can we as Christians here in the United States do to combat this notion that because a leader of another country wants to be fair to the working man in his country, and because he doesn't cater to the rich and the corporate interests, that a so-called Christian leader would call for an assassination? I'm still just shaken and appalled by that. So if you could discuss that a little bit, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. And unfortunately, often Pat Robertson is one of the so-called religious leaders that the media goes to for comments on things, as well as, you say, his own television network is very, very broad, widespread reactions to.
Well, I think the media generally goes to people on the right, and they identify religious issues in our public discourse basically as two, as gay marriage and abortion. And that's to them, that's religion. So they get people to comment on those, and who do you think they get? But of course, if you look more broadly at things like our budget and poverty in this country, hunger, lack of medical care, these are not religious issues. I don't know what are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's really galling to me is that even after this recent episode, you can be sure that Pat Robertson will continue to be quoted by the media. He will continue to have his opinions widely aired, and he will be continued to be interviewed as if he's an authority. And I would guess, in my opinion, somebody who is saying that assassination is a religious value is, in my opinion, a nut. And so I would not think that the media would be going to this person in the future, you know, to find out what his opinions and beliefs are in regard to religion. But unfortunately, it doesn't matter. It seems like you can say real nutty things if you're on the religious right, and the media just sucks it up. It becomes part of the, I don't know, sensationalistic aspect of the media that people, maybe they like that. I don't know. But it's very frustrating to not hear the opposing point of view on this. I guess one of the things we can do is point out as much as we can, how that is not a religious value that most people can agree with. And also point out when I think later on he came back and he lied about what he said. Mm-hmm. He said, I did not say assassinate. I said take him out. But if you go back and listen, he did say assassinate. Mm-hmm. So
they did replay it.
Yeah, they
replayed
it.
So we should not let people get away with lies either or cover-ups.
We have another caller waiting on our toll-free line, line 4. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Good afternoon to the Reverend Mr. Shoemaker and Interfaith Alliance guests. Before your caller asks his question, he desires to make a brief public service announcement for an underutilized WILL program, the Public Square. There have not been sufficient participants getting up on the Public Square soapbox. The time is sometimes unused. Public Square needs more speakers. Please send an email to public.square@gmail.com, and yours truly will be pleased to guide prospective public square participants through the process of gaining 3 minutes of airtime on this station. That taken care of.
Thank you very much.
Your caller would wish to know, does the Interfaith Alliance have Orthodox Christian participation in Champaign-Urbana, and does it have Orthodox Christian participation generally? Thank you.
It's certainly open to anybody who wants to participate or attend. My guess is that people who are on the more Orthodox or conservative end of the spectrum would tend to not find their needs being met there. Their ideologies would probably tend to conflict in some way, but not necessarily. I mean, it is open to everyone. Steve, would you?
I think perhaps the caller is asking about that tradition in Christianity of not Protestant or Catholic, but Orthodox, that tradition. Some people would think of it as Greek Orthodox or Russian Orthodox.
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong, but that's what I'm guessing. And I don't know if there are any local representatives, but I would suspect that nationally the Orthodox Church in America is probably represented in the Interfaith Alliance, but I don't know that for certain.
Well, by the fact that they have 75 different groups.
I believe I read on the website that is represented at the national level. I don't think we have anyone yet locally, but that's part of our goal here is to invite as many people as possible from every tradition.
Let's tell people again how they might learn about at least the local chapter of the Interfaith Alliance. You mentioned the meeting that's coming up September 12th at 7 p.m. at the McKinley Foundation on the corner of 5th and Daniel Street in Champaign, where Professor Robert McKim is talking about environmental issues where many different religious traditions might be involved. There is a national website called interfaithalliance.org that people could check out. Might they contact you by either email or phone, Colleen Vojak?
Sure. My email address is very simple. It's my last name, Vojak, V as in Victor, O-J-A-K, at UIUC.edu.
Thank you very much. And you're trying to have monthly meetings locally. And people who join the Interfaith Alliance might be asked to make a contribution financially to help with the national costs, I suppose, but that's not required locally.
Mm-hmm. Yes, actually, locally we haven't asked for any money from anyone. I recently filled out a grant application from the national organization to receive some funds for helping to set up our website and helping to advertise in the community. So at this point, that's what we're looking towards to get some funds to get things rolling.
And the local chapter is very new, started just last April.
That's right.
Just beginning. So people who might want to join could get in on the ground floor of a local organization.
That's right.
Let me take just a minute to reintroduce our guests here on Keeping the Faith this afternoon. We've been talking about the Interfaith Alliance that tries to bring different voices from different religious traditions to the political and public policy-making process. And we have representing three different religious traditions, Jewish, Muslim, and Christian, Michael Shapiro, Rika Shorish, and Colleen Vojak. And again, thanks to all of you for being on this program. I might mention that Michael is a last-minute fill-in for Walter Feinberg, and thank you especially to Michael for coming at the last minute. This Keeping the Faith program is on weekly here on AM 580 WILL. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for the program. And since we're about halfway through, let me give the phone numbers again for those who are listening who'd like to make a comment or ask a question. In Champaign-Urbana, several lines you may reach by punching 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Elsewhere, there's a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. And, of course, that toll-free number can be used by people who are listening to this program on the Internet at 3w.will.uiuc.edu, where archives of this of former programs can also be heard. Let me say just a word about some of the guests coming up on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead. Next week, guest host Don Nolan will be talking with Bill Plaker. Professor Plaker is at Wabash College in Indiana, a professor of religion there, and he's recently received a grant from the Lilly Foundation, who is concerned with the lack of religious leaders, clergy and others, rabbis, pastors, ministers, priests, in the various religious traditions, the shortage of those folks. And the Lilly Foundation is commissioned Professor Plaker to do some research on from the Christian tradition, looking at the whole issue of vocation and callings to such positions. So that'll be the discussion September 4th here on Keeping the Faith. Later in September, some of our guests will be Mujahid al-Fayyad, the imam from the mosque, Paul Unger from the Methodist tradition, Thomas Albrecht. Thomas Albrecht is a professor of art and design, and he'll be talking about a performance art project of his called Call and Response. Christian Science will be discussed in October, and Jennifer Bishop Jenkins will be one of our guests, talking about murder victim families who are against the death penalty. Families of murder victims who are against the death penalty. That's later in October. So those are some of the programs coming up here on Keeping the Faith, which is supported in part by the University YMCA at the University of Illinois, where I'm the executive director. It's the oldest student organization at the university that's been there continuously. We started in 1873. I say we, although I wasn't around quite that long. The Y has been developing student leaders and by providing opportunities for social action, for involvement in social justice issues, community service. The Y recently finished its huge dump and run project, and I want to thank all the people who donated things to keep them out of the trash and to make them available for students and others this fall. We had our big sale at the Stock Pavilion just over the last 3 days, and many students and many people from the community volunteered, particularly people from one of the local Kiwanis clubs. It was a great event, and literally thousands of students have benefited, and we thank people for their donations. One of the things that has not sold yet is something that was donated, which is a bit unusual. It's a Chevrolet conversion van, a huge van that holds 7 people in quite good comfort. And it's a one-owner. It's for sale at the Y. If you're interested or know someone who'd like a good van to travel in, it's a Chevrolet 2000 Chevrolet 7-passenger van. Call me, Steve Shoemaker, 337-1500 during the week. Well, we have another caller waiting on line 1 to speak with our guest today about the Interfaith Alliance. Go right ahead.
Okay. In the interest of fairness, I think we should mention that Pat Robertson isn't necessarily representative of the fundamentalist Christians either. In fact, I think perhaps that incident points out that maybe it's not so much a case of the religious right hijacking the Republican Party as the other way around, that I have relatives who are fundamentalist. I'm not myself, and we disagree about things like abortion and homosexual rights and so on, but I'm sure they don't favor assassination. So we should always be careful not to characterize everyone on the religious right as being unreasonable, intolerant,
and so forth. Good point. Thank you. Appreciate that comment very much. Other responses?
Well, it's not clear who's hijacking who and whether the Republican Party is hijacking the religious right or the other way around or whether it's a symbiotic relationship. You've made your point well, but I do have to say that I think Pat Robertson has a very wide viewership. I mean, couldn't tell you numbers, but everywhere I turn in the media, somebody's talking about Pat Robertson and what he has to say. So,
he obviously raises a lot of money and does have a lot of people who support him, although not necessarily all of them would agree with this particular statement of his.
Right.
And I think
that's a good point.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think it also actually points to what Colleen and Michael were saying earlier, is that the mass media is actually deciding who's going to be on your TV and who's going to get the big spread. Mm-hmm. And that's another player in this. So I think the caller has a good point on that.
And speaking of groups that get misrepresented. Muslims, of course, are often misrepresented, misunderstood.
Yes.
You were speaking earlier, Rika, about how extremists in different religious groups tend to often be the ones who are most heard, perhaps because they're screaming the loudest or just might sell more television advertising or whatever. But what are the things that bother you the most about how Islam is represented in the media?
I think, obviously the image of that every Muslim is a terrorist and is carrying some sort of submachine gun or has a bomb in their purse or whatever is you know, an image that's really bothers me. And I think the media's total lack of understanding or trying to understand what Islam is or giving airtime to many, many groups that can certainly speak much better than I can to the whole issue. They're just not being given the airtime. They have to fight for every little minute that they can get. And you know, you don't want to go and throw a bomb to get yourself on TV or to make your point. And again, I think that's we're back to the mass media again. Mm-hmm. Is somebody's making all these decisions, and it probably really boils down to the profit line, whatever sells. And, you know, to heck with common understanding or education. And I think that's beginning to really backfire because, you know, this is getting pretty tough now, mm-hmm. or rough.
Were you raised Muslim?
No, I was not.
You're a convert?
I am, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when did you convert?
In the mid-80s.
Hmm. And what was it about Islam that drew you to it?
Several things. Actually, the social justice message, quite a bit of the spirituality of the religion, And oddly enough, given how the mass media portrays Islam, actually the position of women was one of the key issues, because actually the Quran is a wonderful women's liberation document. Mm. It's which again, people are just not taking the time in the mass media and others who want to make mischief. Let's say they misinterpret, they twist, they turn, and that's happened in all religions. It's not just this one, but right now this one is at the forefront.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Michigan, in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
And when you say that the view of women is often misunderstood and twisted, as you say, in popular understanding in Islam, what does the Quran actually say?
Well, actually, if you actually read it, you will find that given at the time that it was revealed, it gave actual status to women. It gave legal status, financial status, all status.
We're talking about 8th century Common Era?
Well, 7th. Yeah.
Okay.
So in a sense, that's what I mean by a very liberating document. Mm. Financial status, you know, I mean, even in Louisiana until recently, they were still under French law, where women couldn't own property. Mm. That sort of thing is what I'm referring to. Spiritually, there is absolutely no difference between men and women before God, and that's a really very important thing.
Sure.
For me personally, the concept that it was Eve who did in Adam and the human race and the apple and all of that, in Islam, the woman is not responsible for original sin. And men, you know, we don't carry that with us. God redeemed both Adam and Eve, and that personally was important to me, that women have not been in Islam the evil one.
since one of the things mentioned earlier around these microphones was learning from one another about different traditions, and now you referred to a story in consider scripture by both Jews and Christians, the Adam and Eve saga. Michael, would you like to respond to that issue?
Well, there are many many ways to interpret. Let me respond in a typical Jewish way by kind of telling a story or retelling a story, because the problem of Eve has perplexed many Jewish commentators of the Bible of both genders, and. The rabbis often asked, why wasn't woman created in an equal way? That is, why out of Adam's rib? And the rabbis answer these questions with what are called midrash. And so the midrash is that, he tried that, actually. He created Lilith, who was Adam's first wife. You don't read this in scripture, but you read it in midrash and commentary. And Lilith, because she had equal claim to her pedigree was just as good as Adam's, refused to take any orders of any sort to subordinate herself in any way. And Adam was very upset about it, and he went to God and said, "You got to do something. I can't live with this woman." And Lilith was removed, translated, and became a kind of witch. And in Jewish superstition, she haunts cribs because she never had children of her own and therefore is jealous of Eve. So it's an ongoing problem, the problem of evil, the problem of women, and connecting them is itself problematic, and why should they be connected? So I can't illuminate this in a theological way, but maybe the story has some value.
and as a speaker from the Christian, the broad Christian tradition, I would see those stories in early Genesis as saga, as early legend, as trying to say, okay, where did things come from? Where did we come from? How is that related to God? And certainly not see it as a way to see women as subordinate to men today. And I would say from the Christian tradition that Jesus treated women as equals to males, to men, and that's the way it should be. But These are interesting topics to discuss.
I just wanted to add that Lilith is the name of a magazine. It's been published now for about 10 or maybe 15 years, a Jewish feminist magazine. So the battle is not over for equality of women within Judaism. Certain branches are more responsive than others, but most of the liberal branches have made place for women. Our local synagogue has had women presidents now for several years, and women have full ritual rights in most liberal synagogues.
And your wife is getting a bat mitzvah soon at age...
Well, all women and girls now do bat mitzvah. My wife is doing it a little late at the age of 66, but that's because she's passionately involved in the study of the Hebrew Bible, and that came first, and out of that she decided to have a bat mitzvah, which we're looking forward to in a few months.
Wonderful. Congratulations. Let me introduce our guests again. We're talking with Michael Shapiro and Colleen Vojak and Rekha Shorish about the Interfaith Alliance. And this is a national group, and let's talk a little bit more about its mission. We really haven't talked much about how it's involved practically in politics. Do you have any hopes locally, Colleen, as you think about what the local group might do in terms of issues that it might be an advocate for?
Well, as I said, we are still trying to define who we are and what our goals are. But I think that one thing that we have talked about is the fact that networking is really important. And oftentimes you have a lot of little groups that are doing their own projects, having their own events, and they're just sort of doing it, not realizing that there are many other people out there that, if they knew about it, they would be also involved and share the same concerns and, you know, want to be involved in it. So one of our goals is basically coalition building, getting people more aware of what's going on out there so that we can join in together and work together towards some different issues that we see are important. And those issues are going to have to be defined, I guess, as on an ongoing basis. People may not always agree on everything, but the point of letting each other know about what's happening, well, then you can pick and choose. You can decide if there's something that's important that you want to get involved in.
We talked about how religious values and morals we feel should impact the political process. In Illinois, it's particularly difficult because so much of the possible aid, for example, for poor people, comes mm-hmm. from the state level. Not from the cities, not from the counties, not from a little bit from some from the township, yes, but it's so hard to influence that things at the state level unless there is organization, unless there is cooperation among groups mm-hmm. and some hard thinking politics. It's perhaps the closest to the local level, other than the townships, would be what the counties spend on the prison system. On police, on the county sheriff, on the courts, on the county jails, on the youth detention center. There's a tremendous amount of the county budget each year goes for those parts of the justice system, or as some people in our society call it, the injustice system, because it seems so slanted against poor folks and black folks and minorities of other sorts. But I would suggest that might be something the local Interfaith Alliance might want to look at, mm-hmm. how to influence the county process. And we have a caller waiting. Let's see what they would like to add to our conversation. You're on line one. Go right ahead, please.
Thank you so much. Your panel mentioned jealousy a lot, and I'm a mom and a grandmom and all that. I've seen that as a human reaction often. I wondered how they would respond. This Keeping the Faith program, I think, is a good place to talk about jealousy, and thank you.
So some of the religious groups seem to be jealous of the power of other religious groups, and some seem to have the ear more of politicians than others. I think I see the import of your mm-hmm. question. Any responses? I suppose Judaism is the smallest religious group in this country. Do you often feel jealous of, legitimately jealous of the power that Christians have in this?
Well, Jews have a long experience of living in a minority.
Yes.
Ever since the diaspora. That's 2,000 years. And, of course, there is now a Jewish state of Israel, which not without its problems, too. But Jews who live in this country, I don't think we feel envious or jealous of other folks who have more larger part of the population pie. That's just the demography. It's the way it is. But we're blessed in a country that has freedom of religion, and I think that makes a big difference. Whereas in other eras, Jews lived in as minority in other cultures by the sufferance of the duke or the king, and were often expelled and exiled. They had no rights at all. Jews have American civil rights just like everybody else.
But there are still some hangovers from the time when Protestant Christians had complete hegemony and power. And, I mean, on your Sabbath, you still have to put money in parking meters. But on my Sabbath, it's all free.
I think we get nervous when we hear people talk about America as a Christian country.
Uh-huh.
And that's dangerous rhetoric, that does bother many Jews. But it's not jealousy; it's more that there is the way in which public funds are often diverted to religious causes, and I say some of those are occasionally Jewish causes. I think Orthodox brethren would like to encourage that, whereas again the liberal congregations think that religion shouldn't be supported by out of the public tax monies.
Are there any Muslim groups that receive public money? Do you know? I know many Christian groups that do.
You know, I really don't know mm-hmm. on that at this particular time. I think what Michael was saying about the notion of a Christian country. I personally, one of the reasons I'm interested in the Interfaith Alliance is that I really want to keep the separation of church or religion and state, and this is extremely important to me personally. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure what the caller was what her definition of jealousy mm-hmm. was, but I think I think Michael and I would certainly agree on the fact that we want to keep a separation of church and state so that mm-hmm. We each can practice our religion without feeling as if we're being oppressed or anything else, or that the whole political system, greater than whether you're putting money in your in your parking meter. But I think I personally see this trend where there seems to be a lot of people that want a merging of what they consider a Christian country, the political machinery of the state, and I find that extraordinarily dangerous. And I don't think it's because people perhaps are Jewish or Muslim. I mean, you could be a Sikh, you can be a Hindu, anything. And if this becomes a one-religion country, all the other religions are the other and somewhat diminished. And then we know where all that leads. So,
yes. I wanted to add, I don't think jealousy is really the right characterization. I think it's more of a concern about the democratic process and wanting to make sure, like Rick has said, that all voices are represented and that, it's fair to all groups, that we're not having one group hijack the process.
Rick, I asked you earlier about your religious background and how you came to be a Muslim. What about you, Michael? Were you raised in the Jewish tradition?
Yeah, I was raised as a Jew. My grandparents were all immigrants, all four of them immigrants from Eastern Europe, where they had a hard life, both economically, and it was hard to be a Jew. And America's been very good to Jews. Mm-hmm. I've been a member of Sinai Temple for over 35 years, ever since I came here, and was president of it, and been president of the Federation as well. We have a very vibrant Jewish community.
Now, here. What branch of Judaism was your family?
Well, the family was conservative, as my parents. Not out of great conviction about that it had to be conservatism. It was the neighborhood synagogue, actually, mm-hmm. and they thought that was a value, just having it so close. And Sinai Temple is Reform, but there are many. It's the only for a long time was the only synagogue in this community. So there are people there who are not necessarily grew up in the Reform movement. I don't think it makes a whole lot of difference these days whether you're Reform, Conservative, or Reconstructionist.
Mm-hmm. Colleen, what's your religious background?
I was raised in Chicago in a primarily Dutch community, and I was raised in the Dutch Reformed Church. Right now I attend McKinley Presbyterian Church in town. Here, I've lived in this community for 17 years. I moved here to be a housing administrator 17 years ago, and I've been here ever since. Now I'm finishing up a graduate program in educational policy studies.
But since you said you came from Chicago, what is your religious commitment? I mean, are you White Sox or Cubs?
I have to say that I'm sort of a zero when it comes to rooting for one team or another. I just somehow that just went over my head. I was not a sports fan as a kid or as an adult, sorry.
Now, Michael, tell our listeners who may not know what you do professionally.
Well, I'm the director of the program in Jewish Culture and Society at the University of Illinois. It's a program that some of us started about almost 25 years ago in the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences to promote Jewish studies in a way that is open to criticism of the Jewish tradition, and many students who are not Jewish or take these courses because they find them interesting.
Now, some people would say, how at a state university can there be a study of a particular religion?
Well, the trustees wrestled with this 30-some years ago. We never had a religion department at this university, and the religious foundations were teaching courses for college credit. And those were not really college courses. Those were indoctrination, you might say. Finally, they decided that we could have a religion where religion could be studied, not preached and not inculcated, but studied critically, and that's what we have now. We have a very good program for the study of religion.
Although it still doesn't have departmental status.
Well, that's a matter of size. That's all. If you have 7 full-time faculty, I think you could then become a department.
But isn't there a large interest among students in taking courses in religion? Couldn't there be more professors hired?
Well, I wouldn't mind seeing more professors hired, but that's an economic problem that many units suffer from.
But I think the religious studies program comes out way ahead in terms of what it produces for the university in terms of tuition.
Well, some of those classes are very popular.
They really are.
The class in world religions
yes.
is extremely popular.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I always like to put in a little plug for the academic study of religion, since that's my background in training as well. Let me reintroduce our guests. We're talking with Colleen Vojak, Rika Shorish, and Michael Shapiro about the Interfaith Alliance and the kind of conversation that can happen and learning between religious traditions. And the local chapter that's just begun of the Interfaith Alliance in this Champaign-Urbana community. What are your hopes for the future as you look long-term for this organization locally, Rika, from the Muslim perspective, perhaps?
Well, I certainly look forward to engaging in a great educational dialogue among all the faith traditions in our community. Everyone needs to learn more about where everyone is, where are you coming from? And then actually working together with different faith traditions. Hopefully there'll be we can get some social action kinds of things going. We can help other churches, the mosque, whatever, set up social action committees. And then be ready to, for example, if somebody's cutting the funds for mental health and it would affect our community, we could have a united front. We could all, with our new website and networking and getting to know each other and understanding where we're all from, get together and then show up at meetings with our locally elected representatives and say, well, no, that's going to hurt. We've got this vulnerable group of people in our community and nobody seems to be thinking about them. And as faith-based institutions, that's our job. That's what we should be doing, mm-hmm. watching out for people who can't watch out for themselves or who have no voice. So that's what I'm looking at.
I see there's a wonderful opportunity for what Colleen was describing as coalition building. Right now in the Jewish community, there's a group trying to get started concerned with social justice. It's not part of Sinai. It's not part of the Federation. It's a freestanding group. And I suspect there are other such groups in other religious traditions. And it would be quite interesting if the alliance could become kind of clearinghouse for such groups. And there are many, as Rick has suggested, many kinds of projects where collaboration would be very important, and we could add our voices together, combine them, and be more effective than we could separately.
I believe that is a major goal of ours. As you mentioned earlier, Steve, we don't have the money as a group to alleviate the suffering of people in the community, you know, the elderly who can't get into the nursing homes because they don't have the funds, or the poor people or the children or whatever. But what we do have is a voice. And when we put those voices together, many voices together, I think we can exert pressure on various people who do control the money to be able to make the decisions to make changes. Whether that be in the form of letter writing, petitions, demonstrations, speaking on local news programs, speaking in place forums like this here, I think, you know, the more voices we join together, the more power we have.
And in the great American tradition of volunteerism, of free association, this is an organization locally that has no money, has no staff, just made up of volunteers,
yes,
of people who are interested.
That's right.
So although it seems like you're starting off something with great goals and not many resources. Of course, you have the strongest resources there are, which are people with good ideas and energy.
Yes, I'm very optimistic because we've only had 4 meetings so far, and already we have about 50 members.
Mm-hmm.
We're growing very quickly.
And tell people in our last few seconds when the next meeting is and how they can contact you.
Okay. Our next meeting is on Monday, September 12th at 7 p.m. in the McKinley Foundation in the Dean Clark Room. And McKinley Foundation is located on the corner of 5th and Daniels. And my email address is vojak@uiuc.edu.
And parking for that September 12th meeting, the university parking lots are open after 5 for the public, and there are 2 fairly close to McKinley Foundation, at 809 South 5th. And let's see, Robert McKim, you said, was going to be the guest at that meeting, and the main topic will be
environmental stewardship and what the different faith traditions have to say about that.
Well, let me thank our guests and, of course, our callers for being on Keeping the Faith this afternoon. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program. And our guests today have been Colleen Vojak and Rick Ashorish and Michael Shapiro, talking about the Interfaith Alliance, which nationally can be learned about by going to interfaithalliance.org. Coming up on Keeping the Faith next week, our guest will be Professor Bill Plaker from Wabash College, talking about 20 centuries of Christian wisdom on vocation, the whole topic of vocation or calling. Paul Unger will be on our guest on September 11th and others. The imam from the mosque, Mujahid Al-Fayyad, will be our guest on the program here September 18. Professor Thomas Albrecht, talking about a religion, art and design project, will be here the 25th. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Once upon a time, not so long ago, the classroom film strip was everywhere. It taught us to change our underwear at least twice a week, among other things. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on the Peabody Award-winning program To the Best of Our Knowledge, we'll revisit the golden age of classroom film strips. So sit up straight. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. WILO programming is funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, offering automotive repair on cars and trucks by ASE-certified technicians. In business since 1984, they perform computerized engine diagnostics, alignments, brake and suspension work, and other repairs. A shuttle service for customers is also available. The phone number for TK Service is 344-0800 or on the web at tkservicecenter.com.
We'll see a diminishing chance for some isolated showers and thunderstorms as the day goes on today in and around Champaign-Urbana. A high near 88, mostly clear tonight, low 58, and then tomorrow mostly sunny with a high of 85. Southwesterly winds around 10 today, light winds tonight and tomorrow. You're listening to WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois.